All the notebooks, would you raise them up, please? All the notebooks. Where are the rest of them? I want them here to next Wednesday night. All the notebooks. All right, fine. Now, we're going through the Proverbs and trying not to be repetitious and learning different things in the Proverbs that will be applicable, and especially is it true for the young people. I think we left off. In fact, help me. Where did we leave off? What verse?
What? Verse 13?
All right, verse 13 says, a foolish son is the calamity of his father, and the contentions of a wife are continual dropping. What did I say about this? What do you have written down there? Be easy to live with, all right, and certainly that ought to be true. Be easy to live with. Everybody, every person ought to be thusly. Now let me start tonight with verse 14. Verse 14, houses and riches are the inheritance of fathers, and a prudent wife is from the Lord. Houses and riches are the inheritance of fathers, and a prudent wife is from the Lord. Now, if you notice the little N there in your Scopia Bible, and follow the N to the reference in the center column, you'll notice Proverbs 18:22. So let's turn over and see what Proverbs 18:22 says, or turn back. Whoso findeth a wife findeth a good thing, and obtaineth favor of the Lord. Now then, it's talking about what kind of wife you ought to be. Now, it has mentioned riches. It said something here about the houses and riches or the inheritance of fathers and a prudent wife. Of course, prudence means wise. And I think since it discusses the word riches and inheritance, I think it has to do with a wife who is prudent with riches. Now, when we say riches, we think of a lot of money. Riches are any money at all. Over in the sermon last Sunday night in the 13th of Matthew, it says that he becometh unfruitful because the seed is choked, because he what? He becomes involved with the riches of this world. That does not necessarily mean a lot of money, just any money. Some of the biggest tightwads I know and some of the biggest money-minded people I know don't have over $100. And what it's saying here, I think it's saying that girls, you ought to be careful financially. I want all the unmarried girls, 13 and over, to stand, please, for just a minute. All the unmarried girls, 13 and over, I want to talk to you for a minute. And I want you to sober up and listen very carefully for a minute. You do not realize it, but you'll be married before you know it, most of you. And I won't be long, but you'll be Mrs. Most of you. Some of you, perhaps God would not have it so, but most of you will get married. Now, one of the curses of our generation is a dollar down and a dollar a week. Now, if you can't pay a dollar a week, don't you put a dollar down. You'll have to realize this. You can't have, the first year you're married, all that mother got in the 25 years she's been married. And I don't want you nagging at your husband when you get married for a washing machine or a dryer. You use the washateria, and you hang your clothes out, and you don't have to have a washer or a dryer the first year you get married. You just be sure. Now, you adults, if you won't laugh, these young folks won't laugh. I'm trying to help them, and you'll be glad if I do, because you won't have to go on their notes if you listen to me. Now, you just remember this, that happiness is not wrapped up in things. And you decide right now that you're going to be a helper with your husband, and that you're going to help him financially and not keep so far in debt all the time that you don't know how to find your way out. You'll fuss more in that condition than any other single thing. Thank you. Be seated. So, what it's saying here, I want you to write it down. Girls, do not be extravagant. Write it down as what number are we on now? What? 107? Is that what you have? 107. Our all number 107. Number 107. That means we have learned 107 different things in Proverbs. And number 107 is verse 14 of chapter 19. And that is, write it, girls, do not be extravagant. Girls, do not be extravagant. I want you to notice a verse in Proverbs chapter 19 and verse 22. I want you to notice, this is interesting. Proverbs 19:22. We're just jumping over. We're going to come back in a minute. In connection with this verse, the desire of a man is his kindness, and a poor man is better than a liar. A poor man is better than a liar. Now look, when you go down to the store and you buy a television set or a refrigerator or a stove or a car or anything else, and you cannot see your way then how to pay for it, you're a liar. And it's better to be a poor man than a liar. I'd rather have my integrity than that new car. I'd rather have my integrity than that new color television set. Now, I beg you, listen, you do not know how many couples in our church separate because they get so far underneath financially they cannot make their payments, meet their obligation, and before you know it, every time the fellow looks at his wife, he sees a dollar mark. And every time she looks at him, she sees a dollar mark, and she blames him because they're in debt, and he blames her because they're in debt. Have a little elasticity. Have a little, what's the word? A little, ground, or a little extra, or a little boundary, a little more. Be sure you see a little more than you think you can spend. Have a little extra left over, a little room to play on, and so forth. Be careful about your finances, young girls especially. Now, this is the reason. Girls are prone to want things more than boys. That's why the devil talked to Eve instead of Adam. Because she was an easier prey than Adam was. Adam was satisfied with what he was eating. Eve wanted some more fruit. All the devil had to say is, this is on sale, and Eve took it. I don't know how much that apple cost, but I know it was something 98. Now, that means that ladies ought to be careful. A prudent wife is from the Lord. Okay, now down to verse 15, please. Number 108. Slothfulness casteth into a deep sleep, and an idle soul shall suffer hunger. Now, I want to have you write a little extra on this one, and here it is. No work, no eat. No work, no success. No work, no eat. No work, no success. Now, what does it mean? It means that if you don't work, you don't have a right to eat. Listen, these people run around this area, all they do for a living is carry a bunch of placards, wanting more things. They ought to starve to death. Every one of them ought to starve to death. They don't have a right to eat. You say, how about Mr. Johnson's war on poverty? I saw a little tin cup out in Colorado. I wanted it so bad I coveted it, but I didn't have the money at the time. It just cost a dollar. But it said, had a little tin cup, a little handle on it. It was a little gold-covered cup, and it said, I am trying to help in Mr. Johnson's war on poverty. Please put your coins in here. Help my poverty, you know. But Mr. Johnson, if he means that it's a good idea to try to figure out new ways to get good jobs for people, that's one thing. If he means feeding some lazy glutton, some pot-bellied beer drinker, then he don't even know the first thing about the Bible. If you don't eat and work, you're not supposed to eat. And if you're too lazy to work, in fact, some of the folks, the most work they've ever done is carry these placards around. And it's good for them. But no work. Now, let me say this again. And please hear this. And I want every one of my preacher boys stand up. Everybody's God's called a priest. Would you stand up? I want to talk to you a minute. Everybody's God's called a priest. All preacher boys. Now, listen to me. If you think that if you get funny like Brother Hiles, you're going to be a good preacher, you've got a hole in your head. And if you think you can build a big church because you preach loud and kick the pulpit and are against picture shows and movies and playing cards and sitting on the sidewalk on Sunday, you've got another thing coming. This church and nobody else's church is built on funny stories or humorous quips. And nothing, whether it's a barbershop or a mousetrap or a church or a home or whatever it is, it's built on four letters. That's W-O-R-K, work. Work. Not talent, work. I'd rather you have work than talent. I'd rather you have both. But if more people have been ruined with talent than have been helped with talent, and more preachers have failed because of too much talent than too little talent. Now, work. Thank you. Okay? That takes care of the preachers. Now, let's see who else I can get on. Let's see. All the preachers' wives stand. I won't talk to you for a minute. No. All right. You were hoping I would, weren't you? You didn't stand a while ago, did you? All the staff stand, please. Work! Work! Work is the answer. You'll have to work. You haven't got any talent. But anyway, work. Okay. Now then, down to verse 17, please. Verse 17. He that hath pity upon the poor lendeth unto the Lord, and that which he hath given will he pay him again. Now I have written down here, beside that, number 109, be liberal. Be liberal. Be generous. Now, it doesn't say he that hath pity on the lazy, and it doesn't say he that hath pity on the beggar. It says he the poor. I would suggest this. I would be very careful about helping beggars. Very careful about helping beggars. I would not be careful about helping poor people who are not beggars. If somebody comes to you asking for money, you be careful. You be very careful. Most of the time, they don't get it from me. This couple I mentioned last week. They never asked me for a dime. They just wanted a place to stay to keep that little baby from getting cold. And didn't ask me for a bite to eat, just a place to stay one night. He had a job starting Monday. He had lost his other job, had a job starting Monday. He didn't drink. And he didn't ask me for a dime. And so I gave him out of my own pocket some money. After I talked to him for a long time, I gave him some money. Hardly ever do I do that. He didn't beg. He did not beg. And so I helped him. So, but be liberal. Let me say this, friends. Young people, develop liberality. Now, I don't want you to think Brother Howes is bragging, but I do want to tell you something. God will give you back what you give to him. There are a lot of people in this room tonight, some people in the room tonight, some who are here, that I helped some this year. Not a lot. I didn't give anybody a lot of money. But I did this year help a lot of people to have vacations. And I gave a little sum of money for me, so some people could have nicer vacations. Now they were going to go on vacations anyway, and I didn't arrange for them to have one, but I did give away for me a little tidy sum of money for folks' vacations this summer. Do you know when I got back off my vacation, and you had placed the money tree and the wonderful welcome that you gave us? Do you know that what you had given us total was within $10 of what I had given others this summer for vacations? Within $10. I didn't even think about it for several hours. I'd counted the money. And I thought, that sounds like about what I've given away this summer. And I started figuring it up, and it was within $10 of the money I'd given for other people to have vacations. And little did I know that you'd pay for our vacation and take care of ours. So I'm simply saying, you won't give God anything. Now you say, well, you're a preacher. If I was a preacher, I'd give a lot too. If you'd give a lot, God might make you a preacher. Then you'd be in a fix. Be generous. My friend Paul Ricker, who's in heaven now, died a few months ago. Paul Ricker said, I ask my people to give because I want to rich people. And there's something that God does about making folks rich spiritually and materially too, if they're liberal and if they're generous. So be generous. Don't be a tightwad. Be the first one to help somebody and be ready to give, and don't lock your purse. Be ready to share with others. All right? Notice in verse 18, please. The next one. Chasten thy son while there is hope. Now, I don't know how long that is. I'd suggest that y'all do it by the time he's won. Y'all be chastening him. And let not thy soul spare for his cry. You know how they look, don't you? And they turn purple, and you know they're going to die. Poor little thing. And you say, oh, I just can't stand to spank him again. Well, look, you don't have to look at his face. Turn him over. Spank him on the hind side. You won't have to look at him while he cries. I just can't stand to look at him. You spank while I spank. You don't have to look at him. Now, I'm simply saying, look. We are going to study about Esther Sunday morning. We learned a while ago something about this, that Esther would not have delivered the Jews if Mordecai hadn't chastened her and taught her obedience. Now, that means chasten the son. I want to say again what I've said before. If your child is 2 or 3 years old and that child can't sit beside you in the doctor's office without you having to promise him everything from an ice cream cone to the keys out of your pocket, then there's something wrong with the way you're rearing that child. I didn't say when he's 5 and 6. I said when he's 2 and 3. You can't get on a bus without everybody looking at you and wishing they could hear somebody talk. Your kid, yak, 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 and holler and scream and howl and howl, and you say, be quiet. Listen, if you've got to do that, it's too late. There's no hope. There's no hope. Now, that's what it means. Chasing him while there's hope. Look, you'll spank him a lot less. And when you spank him, you make an ordeal out of it. Listen, I want to use somebody as an example, but I don't want to spank anybody. Look, you got your kid, and he's misbehaving. in church, for example. I've seen it time and time again. None of you, of course. You're all perfect because you come to hear me on Wednesday night. But these poor heathen that come on Sunday morning that don't come back on Wednesday night, they don't know. And you've seen them. Here's the little kid. And he says, no. And she wails him. You know, that won't do any good. That just stings for a minute. Just for a minute. And he says, you want to be quiet? No. I dare one of my kids say that to me. I just double dog dare one of them to say no to me. And you better do the same thing. And then she... That's not the way to spank him. Sister, if you'd just take that look at... And look, don't get mad at him. Dr. Rice said to me yesterday, he said, when his dad got talking low, watch out. He said a man cussed his dad one time, and the man, his dad said, you remember what you said? Yeah. He said so many teeth fell out that he must have swallowed two of them because he never found two of them. Now I'm not for hitting anybody in the teeth like that, but I didn't what I am for the old kind of character. But then what he said. Now you take that little kid and say, just say, come on. Come on. Take him up. If he kicks, let him kick. Now don't get out in the vestibule and spank him, because we all hear you and we all suffer, and every little kid here just cringes. Take him far enough away. Take him over to the restroom somewhere. Tell him, I'm going to spank you, I'm going to beat the tar out of you. And you're going to learn to set up in church, and you're going to learn to behave. I'm going to chasten you while there's hope. And you're going to thank me for it. Now, if it's a little girl, just say, bend over my knee. If she don't bend, pick her up and spank her right quick for not bending, and then have her bend over your knee. See? You ought to spank her for every offense. And when she bends over, my girls have to pull up their own little skirts. I mean, I'm saving all my energy. And then you just apply it. Now you say, well, you're cruel. You got a hole in your head. Don't you? Listen, you're as sorry as the Vietnam beatniks. You don't like to punish people. You don't like to punish your children and teach them to behave and do right. And these Vietnam pacifists don't like to punish Vietnam for letting communists take over. You're the kind of folks wrong with this country right now. Well, you say, you're awful hard on me. No, I'm not. The Bible is. And you just have a real ordeal. And when that child gets through with that, you make him think it lasted 2 hours and 45 minutes. And take him back over here and just say, sit down. He'll sit down if he can. Sit down. And then look, next time he says, no! Don't say I'm going to take you out and spank you that one more time. Take him out and then tell him I just spanked you. And then next time, all you have to say is, let's tell. And he will. And he will. Right? Look around here tonight. Just look in here. Eyes on me. 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 Right there. Look at this little girl, little Anderson girl right here. Why, she's had a stroke from being spanked. She mouse. Look at little KK sitting down here. Look at little Jeffrey sitting down here. Becky and David are misbehaving, but everybody else is pretty good. Chasing him while there's hope. Look, if you'll listen to me on Wednesday night, you'll make better kids than all the stories and youth activities and youth of Christ rallies and waving the flag that you'll make. Raise some kids that'll sit up and listen to you when you talk. Chasing them while there's hope. Let not thy soul spare for his crying. Now I want to stop and say a word here because it's a funny thing. It's something I wanted to say tonight. I read the whole Proverbs trying to find a scripture that go with it. I couldn't find it. I'm just going to say it anyhow. It's something I wanted to say so bad. And so really, I read every verse. I read all the rest of them. I read all the way through and couldn't find a scripture to go with what I wanted to say. So this is irrelevant, but it does have to do with children. And I think it ought to be said. In our nation, effeminate men and masculine women are becoming a serious problem. It happens oftentimes in homes of sincere people. And oftentimes in homes of people where the parents are godly, and especially the boys, where the parents are godly people who want to shelter and protect their boys until they forget to let their boy become a man. Now, I cannot tell you tonight what I'd like to tell you, but I just want to tell you this. If you have any confidence in my integrity and my telling you the truth, I'll simply say that a lot of you had better listen to me about your boys, and I fear sometime for some boys, and I know that homosexuality sets in our pews oftentimes in this church and in every other church in the land. And a lot of it, and I want to say this, and boys and girls, write this down. Girls, you be feminine. And boys, you be masculine. Fellas, if you have started embroidering, heaven pity you. Quit it. Girls, leave it to the monkeys to hang by their tails from trees. You don't realize what I'm talking tonight, but you take a boy and you keep him in the house. He never feels the touch of a boxing glove on his nose, and never feels the touch thing of a baseball on his hand. Never feels the of a wind knocked out of him when he's going through the line. Never feels what it is to run in the center field fence or slide and get a strawberry right there, sliding into third base. Woo! It still hurts, doesn't it? Huh? He hasn't felt it. There's something wrong with the way you reared that boy. Now, you'll be glad, isn't it? You'll be glad. And a lot of you don't know. One of these days, you're going to say, right now, you say, well, preacher, that homosexuality, that's all down in a certain area of Chicago where a bunch of fellas hang out with a bunch of lewd magazines. You've got a hole in your head. It's right here in this room. Now, you take that boy and mama. If I ever see one of you ladies letting that boy's hair grow out in curls, whenever you come up and find his head cut, hair cut, the number to call is 838-388-8174, because I'm the guy that did it. There's nothing in the world that must be detestable the sight of God than for people to make a little girl have a... I know you wanted Matilda instead of Ernest, but you got Ernest. And I know that it's your shower, everything you got was pink. Well, set it! I hope we don't raise any effeminate boys in our church. Look, if your boy, if he shows a tendency not to walk like a man, you get him and teach him how to walk. If he shows a tendency not to know how to sit like a man, you get him and teach him how to sit with a hand sitting up straight here right now. You get him and teach him how to sit. Now, I'm not saying every fellow that walks like a sissy is a homosexual, but I am saying, brother, it is a serious thing in America. In these big cities with people stacked on people, it's a serious problem. Now, you teach your boy to be a boy, and mamas, you don't try to put your finger in the fire when dad's trying to make a bald man out of him. Now, fellas, you be men. You be men. Now, girls, listen to me. It's just almost as serious in girls. Girls, I'm not saying that you shouldn't run and play. I am saying, though, that girls ought to like to wear pretty clothes, frills, perfume, curl their hair, and ought to know how to walk like a girl, and sit like a girl, and dress like a girl, and fix your hair like a girl, and talk like a girl, and behave like a girl. A lot of girls. And now, you say, Richard, what are you talking about? I'm talking about, I know ladies that are setting up housekeeping with ladies, and men that are setting up housekeeping with men within a half a mile of where I stand right now, and a lot of them have heard me preach. And we kept it hush-hush until somebody had better stop and start rearing some feminine girls and some masculine boys. Girls, be feminine.
Don't run up down the street with a blue jeans on and act like your hair all cut up like a boy and bobbed up and acting like a man. You be sweet and feminine and act like a little lady and grow up to be a sweet, soft, feminine young lady. That's the kind that God wants you to be. And boys, you don't have to be a big bully, but you can, you beetle haircutters. Only thing I hate worse than a long-haired boy, a long-haired little boy is a long-haired big boy. Be careful. I'm not mad at anybody. I'm saying be careful. If God's called your boy to preach, you be doubly careful. Joe, did you know in the seminary, when I went to seminary at Fort Worth, when a fellow entered in as a minister, immediately they double-checked him for this very thing. If God's called your boy to be a preacher, I think any preacher worth his salt ought to be able to go out and play ball with the young people and not be embarrassed over the way he plays. throw me a ball. Throw me a ball, yeah. I want to see. Good. No, see there? That's what I mean. Cain, throw a ball. That hit his head on a song book. Now I want to say something else, too. Now, please understand me. I'm not trying to run your life for you. I'm trying to help you, really. I mean, you think I'm trying to meddle. A lot of you folks think I'm going to come by your house every week and check on everything. I'm not going to do that, but I want to help you. There's nothing wrong with a boy taking clarinet lessons, but be sure he doesn't use all his time practicing. You be sure you get him out on the fishing hole. Dad, a lot of this because you left the thermometer rear the boy. You were so busy making a living, you didn't have time for the boy, and the boy was hanging around Mama so much, he took up, he knows how to make brownies. But listen, he wouldn't know if he went fishing whether to put the worm on a hook or eat it. Now, I'm trying to help you, and if you'll let me, I'll help your boys and girls. I will. I'm not saying a boy ought to be a bully or a girl ought to be a wallflower. I'm simply saying a boy ought to be a he-man and a girl ought to be a lady. See to it they are. Verse 19 is a good verse. Hold it. Some of you right now are saying, some of you men are saying, I'm going to write letters. I'm going to go to another church. And some of you ladies have said to your husband, come on, let's go. Oh, help us. Verse 19. A man of great wrath shall suffer punishment. Now here it is. For if thou deliver him, yet thou must do it again. That if a man does great wrath, be sure he gets punished for it. If he doesn't, if you deliver him, you will have to deliver him again. What does it mean? It means exactly this. You let the communists get by in Vietnam, you'll have to let them get by somewhere else. It's exactly what it means. You check the crowd that is pacifist about Vietnam. Now hear me. It is not Vietnam they're concerned about. It is a theory in our colleges especially. Did you know at the Oberlin College that Charles G. Finney founded? Did you know at the Oberlin College in Oberlin, Ohio, and I talked to a man who pastors there today, this morning, he took me to the airport. Did you know in Oberlin College, founded by Charles G. Finney, they hanged Jesus Christ in effigy recently? They took a likeness of Christ and made a little dummy-type figure and made it look like a likeness of Jesus Christ and crucified him again. That's what they call his Charles G. Finney still. Tell you what, if they'd have had somebody stand in the pulpit like we try to do here in a church like we try to have here and out across the street in that college trying to alert those people and look, and here's what they're doing. That same crowd, just like the Berkeley campus of California, that same crowd. They're against punishing the communists in Vietnam, and you go a step further, they're also against capital punishment, and they're also against spanking children. It's not Vietnam, it's a philosophy of life of not punishing wrong. Now I want to go a step further. If you don't spank your child when he does wrong, you're committing the same sin in your home that we would commit if we pulled out of Vietnam. Same sin. If you deliver a person who does wrong, it says right here, you'll have to do it again. A man of great wrath shall suffer punishment, for if thou deliver him, yet thou must do it again. What does it mean? You'll deliver him again and again and again and again. Punishment ought to be administered. Okay, let's go further. Down to verse 20. What did I say about verse 19? Anything? I'll write it down. It's what used to be on the Edinburgh Review again and again. The judge is condemned when the guilty is acquitted. Write that down. The judge is condemned when the guilty is acquitted. Verse 20, hear counsel and receive instruction, that thou mayest be wise in thy latter end. Write it down beside it, the next number. Listen now, and you can advise later. Listen now, and you can advise later. If you can learn these truths that Solomon gave us and that I'm trying to give you, then someday you can give them to someone else if you'll listen now. If you'll listen now. Young people, while you're young, listen. I said to the boy today, I said there's a certain preacher going to go places. Young preacher in his 20s, he's going to go places. You know why? Why? Because he'll listen to advice. He'll listen to advice. I said to the boy today, again, we're talking. He doesn't look it really, I mean it. But he's 10 years my senior. Now, please don't look too shocked, but he doesn't look that much older than I. In fact, I'm not going to say a word because you smart alecks will take it up from here. But I'll say this much. The boy is 10 years my senior. We started preaching almost at the same time, but he was older than I, and he was experienced before I was. Today, I was talking to him, and I've been trying to use what little influence I have to help him get back in the evangelistic field. We've been working on his meetings and trying to get good opportunities for him and so forth. And I've have articles in the Sword of the Lord. I've made many phone calls, written many letters, and so forth. And the boy was talking about a little word of appreciation because I'm trying to help. And I said, I want to help. Because when I was a kid preacher, he helped me, you see. And he taught me a great deal about many things when I was a younger preacher. Now then that I have tried to learn those things and I've listened to many, many others, now in turn I can help him a little bit and we can be a help to each other. If you want to be a help to people, you're going to have to listen. And especially, is it true, while you're young, listen. Folks, Dr. Rice said this yesterday to me. He said, one thing that I think helped me learn more than many things was this. When I was a boy, we always had the preacher come to eat at our house. That's back in the days when the preacher was a circuit rider and he got paid with turnip greens and black-eyed peas and green beans and buttermilk and so forth. And he said they always had the preacher come. The preacher used to be a circuit rider. He'd come through town, didn't live there, and he ate in the home. Brother Rice said, we always had the preacher. And he said, I used to listen and listen and listen and listen. When there's some adults talking in your house, what do? Plop yourself down and watch the television set? You ought to be listening what the adults have to say. Listen, 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 and then you can advise later. Okay, go down to verse 26. He that wasteth his father and chaseth away his mother is a son that causeth shame and bringeth reproach. Right beside it, always respect your parents. Always respect your parents. Young people and older people, if you have a living mother or a living father, you respect them. Respect them. Never make fun of them. Never be ashamed of them. Always listen to them. Respect them. When they get so... I was at Bob Jones University. I was preaching down there a couple of days. You know Dr. Bob Sr. has lost his mind almost. Remember when he came here, he told the same story 8 times one night. At a table, he embarrassed everybody at the table. Except his son. His son never was embarrassed. He'd tell the same thing over again. Bob Jr. just like, that's right, Dad. That's right. You see, Bob Jr.'s got some character, and that's why he's president of that school. And that's why he's gone against almost every rule of being the son of a great man. The son of great men hardly ever follow the footsteps of their dad. I'm talking about the same work. They're often successful in another type of work. But that's why, listen, that old man sat there. It's too bad. They asked him to go out and pray in a service, to dedicate a new building, Dr. Bob Sr. A young preacher asked him to come out and lead the dedicatory prayer just out of respect to Dr. Bob Sr. And so he went out, and the young preacher said, at the first of the service, Dr. Bob Sr. is going to come up and lead us in our dedication prayer for our new building. Dr. Bob got up, preached 45 minutes or so. And when he got through preaching, he called on the pastor, and he said, "Hey, young man, would you come lead us in our closing prayer?" And the young man was both preached, and he told about him. And Dr. Bob Jr. sat there. He never said that. You said that. He never said that. Be careful now. Our dad, we better go. He sat there and he listened to him. Every time he told the same thing over again, he listened to him over and over again. And he always was interested. And he never rebuked him. And he never took him out. Why? Because he'd been taught to respect the old man. And because he's afraid if he rebuked him, the old man would whip the fire out of him. Now, that's what makes great people. That's what makes great people. You're going to have to learn respect. To learn respect, and especially for your mother and father. All right. Let's go further. Look down to chapter 20, please, and verse 1. Chapter 20, verse 1. Wine is a mocker. Strong drink is raging. And whosoever is deceived thereby is not wise. Just right beside it. Never touch a drop. Write it down. Never touch a drop. Now, this is sort of foolish to do, but I'm going to do it. I want every young person in this house, every person 21 and under, in this building, if you have promised God already, or if you will say tonight, have you never done it before? You probably don't intend to, but you will say, "Preacher, I'm just not ever going to touch it. I pledge God, not a drop of whiskey, beer, wine, or intoxicated beverage to ever touch this tongue." Would you stand up? Now, I don't want you to forget. I don't want you to forget it. Thank you. Be seated. Just never touch it. Don't wonder what it tastes like and say, "One swallow won't hurt me. I'll always wonder what it tastes like." Just forget it and I not know what it tastes like. I've never tasted it and I'm as happy as a lark. Just don't ever taste it. Verse 3. It is an honor for a man to cease from strife, but every fool will be meddling. Right down beside this one, don't be an arguer. Don't be an arguer. Arguer is spelled A-R-G-E-R. Arguer. Don't be an arguer. That's a hard one to say. Arguer. Don't be an arguer. Arguer. Here's what it means. Did you ever, are you like me? Do you like to just take some side of something and see if you can wiggle your way out of it? That's a waste of time. It really is. Opinionated people have to watch it here, and I'm an opinionated person. Look, don't ever ask me what I think about something. I'll tell you. And then the funny thing about it is I want you to do what I say. So I try real hard not to tell too many people what they ought to do. About stuff. I work on it all the time. Stuff that doesn't really matter a great deal. I mean, if I walked out there and saw those fellows putting up that steel and they said, "What do you think about that?" I'd go up and check it. And I don't know a thing about it. But they'd think I did. And the building would fall down someday. I'm simply saying, don't be the kind of person that, "Good morning. I don't think it's so good." "No, it's not really good, is it?" "Well, it's not so bad." "Oh, but it's just about even." "No, it's not really even." Huh? Don't be the kind of person that when something's brought up, you always want to... There are a lot of things not worth arguing about. In fact, nothing's really worth arguing about. But don't be the kind that always is... always want to pick an argument with somebody. That's what it means here. All right, let's go further. Verse 4 is a great verse. "The sluggard will not plow by reason of the cold. Therefore shall he beg and harvest and have nothing." And the Bible says he ought to have nothing. The modern version of that would be, the sluggard will not plow with the cold, therefore shall he demonstrate and harvest and have nothing. Now, two things I want you to write down here. One is, be consistent. If you're going to do it in hot weather, do it in cold weather too. Be consistent. Be consistent. Be the kind of person that's predictable. The kind of person that folks will not wonder how to treat you every time they see you, and have to sort of wiggle out and figure out what kind of mood you're in before they know how to handle you every time. That's a pretty sorry kind of person to be. Don't be predictable. Now, the next thing about that, the same verse, write it down, and that is, give excuses for failure. Don't give excuses for failure. Well, tell you what now, we would have a big church, but we live in a hard area. Or we would do this, I would be the foreman on the job, but the boss is partial. Or I would have gotten a raise, but you know how they treat Christians. Don't be that kind of person. If you succeed, succeed. If you fail, fail. Don't offer excuses. Don't offer excuses. Verse 5. Counsel in the heart of a man is like deep water. But a man of understanding, get this now, a man of understanding will draw it out. That's comparing to a well. How many ever lived where you had an old-fashioned well? Had a pulley on it, and a rope on the pulley, and a big knot to keep the rope from going through the pulley, remember? Huh? And then enough room at the end of the knot where you can get your hand on it. And a long time. You put the bucket down in, and the bucket just sits there. Was a hole up. Now you've got to get water in it. What do you do? Huh? You don't go down in there and tip it over. You take the rope and you jiggle the rope and hope to get it over, and you get a little bit, don't you? And what do you do? You pull it up just about a few feet and what? Let her fall. And it'll fall down and get a little more, and finally you pull it and let it fall and go. And when you feed it, when you go like that, it's time to start pulling. You see. Now look, keep pulling. If there's not much water gets in it the first time, wiggle a rope, pull a rope, let it pop down. Give it enough slack where it'll lean over, and then wiggle it a bit, and pull it, let it go back down, pull it, let it go back down, and keep, listen, get it, it's there, get it. Look. When you're around a person that knows something you don't know, that's what I was talking about. Keep pulling till you get it. Look, listen to me. Counsel in the heart of a man is like deep water. Okay, you want me to teach you something? Is there something you want to learn from me? Like deep water. Okay? But a man of understanding will draw it out. Huh? I get around Dr. Rice, Dr. Jones, when he was rational. Question. Draw it out. Same thing with your mom and daddy. Keep wiggling the rope. Keep tilting the bucket. Keep letting it drop down. Get a little more water. Draw it out. It'll be hard, but draw it out. The more you can get from people that know more than you do, the better off you're going to be. So, everybody you can get around that knows something you don't know, and that's most everybody, I've got a motto. Everybody knows something I do not know. I must probe till I find it, and all men can be my teachers. Everybody can teach me something, and everybody can teach you something. So, it's like a deep well or deep water. A man of understanding will draw it out. Listen, I can almost tell you what preacher boys of mine are going to turn out for the best. The ones that will listen to what Brother Hiles said. We got a preacher boy? I'm not going to tell that. But I will say this. I know preacher boys that have made decisions to affect their life and never walked inside my office or called me on the phone. Preachers will pick up their telephone and call me from 1,000 miles away, and oftentimes more than that, to get advice from me about their churches. Sandy Plopp will tell you there's hardly a day passes I don't get more than one letter or sometimes many letters from preachers that want advice and counsel and help. What can I do, Pastor? Help me here and help me there. And yet right here in our own church, young preacher said, who never darkened the pastor's door or rang his telephone, and you're not going to know any more than you learn from others. Hear me, there is no such thing as a self-made man. The man that says, I'm a self-made man, is a cocky liar. I take it back. The shape he's in, he might have made himself. But he ain't worth me. I wouldn't brag on what I've made. There is no successful man that's a self-made man. His mama helped make him. His daddy helped make him. His pastor helped make him. His grandmother helped make him. His granddad helped make him. His aunts and uncles helped make him. His brothers and sisters helped make him. His Sunday school teachers helped make him. His school teachers helped make him. Every good person he ever met helped make him. How do I know? How do you know what made us what we are? How do we know what person one day we passed by whom we did not even recognize and whom we did not remember? How do we know what they planted in our lives as things that helped to make us whatever we are today? And we probably owe things to people we do not even know the people, and it'll be an eternity before we ever know what made us. Who put that little pinch of salt here and that little flavor here and that little flavor here? We do not know all of them. Here's what we can do. We can say, with the grace of God, it wasn't all me, and I am what I am, but the grace of God and the help of others, and I'm going to give the credit to God and to them. We can do that, and then God will bless us because we did. Draw it out. Seek counsel. All right, verse 7. The just man walketh in his integrity. His children are blessed after him. I have written down beside that something for parents. You owe your children character. You owe your children character. Most of you, if you died tonight, your kids would have to borrow money to put you away. I'm not saying most of you, but many of you. And that's, I'm not criticizing you for it. But there's something that you can, that every one of us can leave our children. And that's character. Look, did you know you can go home and teach your kids what I'm teaching them tonight? And if you can't, the least you can do is bring them here so I can teach them. But listen to me. There's not a one of us that can't leave character to our children. I thought of a thought today. I like a lot of slogans. Dr. Rice has asked me to put a lot of them on paper and put them in the store. One I thought, personality without wisdom. No, a personality without wisdom is probably a character. A personality without wisdom is probably a character. I thought of another one, too. Don't ever tell all you know on any subject. Somebody may ask you a question when you get through. But anyhow, personality. Look, personality. Go to school, charm school. And the teacher says, good morning, Mrs. Jones. And that's all. I'm not against that. You know, I think you ought to know how to meet people. There ought to be something down deep, too. Leave character to your children. When they gather your little goods up and say a few words about you at the cemetery, at the funeral home, they go home and mama's gone and daddy's gone, and they try to pick up the little few things you left them. You be sure while they pick it up, there's the word character. Verse 11, even a child is known by his doings, whether his work be pure and whether it be right. And I have beside that, just be pure. Be pure. I want every person here 21 years and under who will say, Brother Hiles, I'll set my goal to walk down this aisle or wherever I get married. I'll set my goal to enter the marriage altar pure and saved for my husband or my wife. I want you to stand. Now, while you're standing, I want to say this. This will not be easy. But you'll have a treasure that money cannot buy if you'll do what you just promised you'll do. You be sure that when you say, I do, you can say in your heart, I save myself for you. And you'll not be sorry. Be seated. Thank you. 17, verse 17, we're almost through. Bread of deceit is sweet to a man, but afterwards his mouth shall be filled with gravel. Right beside it, right? Be truthful, completely truthful. Be completely truthful. Be completely truthful. Deceit is sweet to a man. Deceit tastes good now. But afterwards, it's like a mouth filled with gravel. Verse 19 is the last one for tonight. We have many others, but we'll stop at verse 19. He that goeth about as a talebearer revealeth secrets. Therefore, meddle not with him that flattereth with his lips. Right beside it, be honest in your compliments. Be honest in your compliments. I believe that you ought to be looking for nice things to compliment. I think when you see a man, that you men see a fellow has a pretty tie, you ought to tell him it's pretty. Fellow has on a pretty suit, tell him about it. For a person has a pretty home, tell him. Have pretty furniture, tell him. Pretty picture, tell him. Pretty house, tell him. Pretty car, tell him. But don't be that kind that absolutely... the Bible says little honey is okay, but don't drink too much honey, it'll just wear you out. And oh, you're looking good today. Well, I've never seen you look any better. Oh, what a fine little child you have. He's just pulling out the electrical socket, throwing the vase on the floor, pulling the burning log out of the fireplace, cutting the new carpet with the scissors, pulling down the light bulb out of the ceiling. And the fellow says, what a nice little child you have. Well, now, that's not true. Be complimentary, but be honest with it. Look, do you know anybody that every time they say anything nice about you, you know they're lying? Huh? You just take it with a grain of salt. They're so extravagant with their compliments, you know they don't mean it, and you know they have an ulterior motive in it when they say, you look nice today. Don't be that kind. I'm simply saying, all of it wrapped up in a bundle. I'm simply saying, young people, listen to me. Walk straight. Stand tall. Be open. Be honest. Be sincere. Be clean. Be right. And you'll find everything I've said wrapped up in those statements. I said when I got stood up, when a young lady like Gail stands up to sing, I'm not taking the credit for it. Good night. Mrs. McKinney and her husband have reared that daughter right, and those godly grandparents have taught her right. You know that's the truth. But I hope when she does get finished and goes off to school or gets married, I hope I can say I had a little help in it. I won't have a little part in it. And I pray God will help us to rear some the finest people in the land. I got a letter this week from several of our kids in college. Rick Wainscott wrote me a love letter. And Rick said something very interesting. He said, Brother Hiles, at college, he didn't mention the boys because he's one of the boys. He said, here at Tennessee Temple, we have the best manners, the nicest, the most grateful and charming girls on the campus from First Baptist. Isn't that wonderful? Huh? That's our girls. And he said, they're the friendliest. He didn't say the prettiest, though I'm sure he could have, but he wasn't trying to get a gal. He just said, we have the nicest and the friendliest. I hope he meant that when Dr. Robertson said, how do you do? I understand you're from Dr. Howes' church. They said, yes, Dr. Robertson, and we're so glad to be here. That's what I hope they said. And I hope when he said, I want you to meet my wife, Mrs. Robertson, I hope with charm they said, how do you do, Mrs. Robertson? I've heard so much about you, and I thank God for you. Just enough, not too much. That's what I want us to have. And that's one reason why I'm beating your head against a wall and hollering and screaming and acting a fool up here. I went home last Wednesday night after acting out that little pantomime of that fellow that faucet got to leaking. I said to my wife, I hate myself when I get in that kind of a mood. Really, I told her, I said, that's not what kind of preacher I want to be. I don't like to do that. I mean, I want to be, you know, dignified. But I don't want to do that. But look, I want you to get the point. And I'm making a fool out of myself, so you'll get the point. I want you to get the idea. I want you to be Christian, right. Simply, right. But I want you boys to be the finest gentlemen, I mean masculine gentlemen. And I want you girls to be the delightful, charming young ladies. To your church, to your mother and father, but most of all, to him who died to save you.